Welcome to the May 21st, 2017 workshop of Leadership 101, How to Lead Effectively and Be a Good Leader. I'm Suzanne, and a Grateful Compulsive Eater, and I'm your facilitator for this workshop. For those of you who'd like to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, everybody, this is a workshop. We're going to have 7 speakers, so if you would like to take notes, I'm going to be the cleanup speaker, and we'll go over the technical aspects of leading a meeting, but we're going to address a few things at this meeting, and I think the message is how to have a loving tone to be a good leader, but also make this a safe place, and also how the structure and discipline that our program asks us to have. So everybody should stay muted. There will be a question and answer after the third speaker, and then we'll have more question and answer after the last speaker of the second part. And anybody can ask a question. There'll be no absence requirement. It is being recorded, so just say, I'm a compulsive eater. You don't have to give your name if you want to ask a question at the appropriate time. Our first speaker is Susan C. from New York. And Susan, we have a spiritual timekeeper. How would you like your time?
It would be 5 minutes and then 1 minute, please.
Okay, thank you. All right, Susan, please qualify and then tell us how you lead a meeting. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, everyone. My name is Susan. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm calling in from New York. And I've been in CHOW since 2006. And I don't remember if we qualify everything for the workshops, but I will. I have 10 years, 6 months, 28 days of abstinence, and I have a 45-pound weight loss. And to me, each day is a new day. So even though I have these 10 years, 10 and a half years or so, I do look on each day of recovery as a different day. I can't really just rest on my laurels or think that just because I've been abstinent for such and such an amount of time or that my recovery is through. I've been on phone bridge meetings for all that time. And I know this is a meeting on Leadership 101. And leading a meeting, I just want to say from the very beginning, and maybe this is something that sets the tone for other people, I think the purpose of a workshop such as this one is not for me to say, you know, how well I lead a meeting or, you know, what's good about what I do, but to encourage you, everyone listening, and maybe later on when it's on tape, to encourage everyone that can to think about sharing the service, because it is a service, and there's so much of a need for people to moderate and to lead meetings. I always think that the main purpose of a meeting is to have a meeting. I mean, that's why people come on to the phone bridge or go to face-to-face meetings. So if I'm thinking of motivation, that's one of the biggest motivations. I need a meeting, and other people need a meeting. I'm required to get to at least 3 CHOW meetings a week, and we have so many meetings now on the phone bridge, but we need moderators, we need leaders. So that's the first part of what I would say is to encourage and to give some message, to transmit some message along the way in my talk that it's not a difficult assignment. It's not a difficult service position. And yet there are some ins and outs, you know, that I need to feel secure and I need to feel confident. And, you know, that's what any of us would need in leading a meeting. You know, I need to have a good telephone. I need the connection to be good. One of the challenging parts about leading a meeting is the phone. Actually, I'm not even seeing anybody. There could be a few people on the line. I know as a leader or a moderator, I can tell how many people are on the line, but people can be from anywhere. They can be local or they can be anywhere around the world. And they're, you know, not to scare you off or anything, but anything that could possibly happen on a phone bridge meeting will probably happen, you know, one way or another. You know, there could be disruptions. There could be disruptions on the line. There could be disruptions when people are not muting their own line. I mean, just picture 30, 40, 50 of us and having a quiet meeting. It's close to a miracle that can happen 5, 6, 7, 8 times a day on the CHAL phone bridge. And things do happen. It's not anything, you know, that is catastrophic, but I mean, it could rattle. It has rattled me at times, and you know, I hear people say, just expect, if you know, Murphy's Law. You know, if you can think of something that might go wrong, it could. But I also keep in mind that there's always other people on the line that has been in a position of leading meetings. And there's also people on the line that want a meeting very much. That's what they're there for. They're not there to, you know, drum up trouble or, you know, be critics. But you know, they need a meeting too. We all do actually need the meeting. So I just say, yeah, let's try to make it as easy to understand as possible. And that's what the phone bridge meetings have done over the years, and that's what the intergroup has done, and individual people. There have been formats, you know, different meeting formats, and because of the good technology that we have now, I can go right onto the CHAL website. I can download a meeting format, and right now I'm trying to think of what my service is for leading meetings. I think I'm leading at least two meetings. They're early ones. They're early 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time meetings. And maybe three. And what I like to do now is not to be the one leader of the every week. I like to share it with other people, and that makes it easier for me, and I think it makes it easier for other people. Maybe the one difficulty might be is just trying to keep straight which week I have for a meditation meeting or for a daily reflection meeting or you know, for a topic meeting. But it's really good, and I'm sure people have said this before. It gets me to the meeting. Anything with service like this, it gets me there. The meeting formats are very easy to follow, and part of my job as a leader or a moderator is to make sure I've got the most current formats, and they are written up. And then because we have the tradition of each meeting is autonomous, a meeting that I'm leading may have decided in a business meeting or in a group conscience, they may have decided something that might be a little bit different than what the format says. One meeting may decide, and they might vote on having a spiritual timekeeper. One meeting may not. So, you know, there are some responsibilities that go with being a moderator, and it's really not rocket science. It's more being willing to take the responsibility, and then also being willing to pass it on to the next person. So just to make sure that that your meeting format is current, and somebody, whether it's me or someone else on that meeting, is willing to make any changes to the format that come out of a business meeting. And that does happen. Things do happen from time to time. I wanted to read something from As Bill Sees It, before I forget about reading it and then the time goes. But it's in As Bill Sees It, page 254. And this helps me to understand, why am I motivated to lead a meeting? And maybe it will be something that, clicks with you too. This is called Satisfactions of Right Living. How wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort, the fact that in God's sight all human beings are important, the proof that love freely given brings a full return, the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons, the surety that we can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the satisfactions of right living, for which no pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could possibly be substitutes. And there's so many different ways that I can be of service and being a leader or moderator for a meeting is one of them. And sometimes it comes up to be a leader on a marathon, and that's always another way that it's really, I'd say, fun. It really does sometimes border on fun. And I just think it's important for me to share it with other people. I don't like to be considered as a person, somebody might say, well, that's my meeting, or, that's her meeting. I think that there's a time to take a meeting and be a leader or a moderator on a meeting, and there's a time to also give it up.
That was 5 minutes left.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot. So I would say for me to know when it is the right time to step up and when it's the right time to step down and give someone else a chance. I also think that it's important for me to encourage other people, my sponsees and fellow travelers, people that I speak to frequently, to encourage and to let people know that it's not difficult and it's very much needed, to be of service. I also realize, maybe somewhere along the line, I realize that it might not be for everybody. There might be people, some of you might be very, very scared of doing that particular service, but you'd want to do another service, like be a timekeeper or read something at a meeting. But if I could just reassure you and just allay some of your fears that, it's difficult. I first started out when I came to see how back in 2006, I started out by listening and then by maybe reading something, reading one of the steps or the traditions. And then maybe after that, I took a chance. At some point, I did take a chance, and there were people that helped me out. And, some people even encouraged me to practice, by calling up, the phone number and practicing the codes You know, there's something a little bit, you know, foreign about, you know, having, you know, unless a person is experienced, you know, as a switchboard operator or something like that. But there's something that's a little bit foreign about, you know, using the leader code and muting and unmuting the line. And it's very, it is important because a meeting can't really be, you know, get along well if there's noise or if there's too much confusion or disruption on the line. But I just find that in CHOW, we do help one another out, and people did help me out. I needed to be, you know, coaxed a little bit, and I think that's true of other people, too. As soon as we reach 30 days of back-to-back CHOW abstinence, we
1 minute.
Thank you. We're given the chance to, you know, to moderate and lead a meeting. And I can just encourage you again to think about stepping up. Well, usually the meetings go by quarterly commitments, or sometimes they even go month to month. And there's always a meeting that needs a moderator. So I'm glad that I'm able to speak up. And if you have any questions, I'll stick around after the next couple of speakers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Susan. I don't know if you'd like to leave your number, but you may do so if you want to.
I do, yes. I'm at area code 718-981-8754. Thanks, Suzanne.
Thank you. I know that's Eastern time. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Susan. Before we go to our next speaker, I would just like to remind everybody we will have question and answer. We'll have two sessions of that. But also, I just wanted to put this out there. At a intergroup meeting a year ago, maybe it was a year and a half ago, we voted to ask for donations for the workshop. So if you like this workshop, please consider sending in a Seventh Tradition contribution donation for the workshop, and whatever you feel that you can give or want to give. Okay, our next speaker is Barbara from New Mexico. Good morning. How would you like your time?
5:01, please.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Go ahead.
Thank you, Suzanne. Thanks for your service. My name is Barbara, compulsive eater from Albuquerque. My abstinence date is January 1st, 2003. I'm in the maintenance process on an approximately 45-pound weight loss in CHOW, down approximately 85 from my top weight. I'm a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor, and I'm available for outreach calls. And I've been asked to speak about some of the aspects of leadership on the meeting and how I lead a meeting. So what I wanted to start with was what I do. I generally prep for the meeting either the day before or an hour or so before, depending upon how things time out. But my first order of business, my job, I consider visualizing my role in the meeting. Essentially, I'm an agent of my higher power as expressed in our group conscience. And so when I'm getting ready for a meeting, I read through the format. My job is to understand and follow the format. That's the beauty part of doing this. We don't have to wing it. There's a format there, and we can call that up and follow it. If it's a topic meeting, I make sure I have the topic chosen. If there are certain readings, like in the NASBEL CSIT meeting, I get an idea of what the topic is, and then I go in and start reading through all the readings to decide what might be the ones to touch upon in the meeting. If it's like a big book meeting, I want to make sure I know where we are in the big book so that we don't have to spend time in the meeting asking someone to give us the place. And in the case of the concept tool line meeting, I like to know, you know, what concept or tool line we're on as I get into the meeting so I'm prepared, and whether or not we have a speaker lined up. Once all of that's been pretty much laid out, I write myself a format with all of the different things that I may have to add in, like if someone, who's going to be the person to read a particular reading, who's the timekeeper, et cetera, et cetera. And I make like a skeleton page so that I can fill those things out as I go. 5 minutes before the meeting, I clear the line, mass mute, I cut the chimes, And if the format dictates, I'll ask for readers prior to the meeting. If it does not, I don't. Again, the format usually says if they want you to do that, and if they don't, then I don't do it. And then during the meeting, I just follow the format, and I try to keep in mind traditions 5, 6, and 10. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. So as I sit down to that meeting, my focus is this meeting is for carrying the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. I remember Tradition 6, which is a CHOW group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the CHOW name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. For instance, if in the course of the meeting someone mentions, let's say, for example, a motivational tape series, for lack of a better example. In a situation like that, a newcomer might think that they have to go out and buy that, and that can get confusing to the newcomer. So that's an aspect of that tradition. And CHOW has no opinion, this is Tradition 10, no opinion on outside issues, hence the CHOW name ought never be drawn into public controversy. We're living in a very controversial climate right now in a lot of ways, and my job is to maintain the integrity of that this tradition, to carry the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. So when the outside issues come in, those are the things that I keep my focus on as the leader. And toward that end, as I'm leading a meeting, several times throughout the meeting, I'll repeat the topic or the reading that we're doing. So if someone comes in late, they know the subject of the meeting. They may feel compelled to share based on what someone else is saying and create crosstalk. What I try to do is maintain the integrity of the subject matter. So if we're talking about, for example, meditation and prayer, and someone talks about, you know, some aspect of something they're doing with meditation and prayer, and the other person picks up on it, you know, and they're responding to that, I try to make sure that whoever is in the room, our virtual room, knows that we're focused on meditation and prayer. So it becomes a pure attention to whatever subject matter we're dealing with. And one of the things that I try to remember as a participant in the meeting or a leader if I happen to be sharing is that my job is to bring the mess to my sponsor and the message to the meeting. Prior to this workshop, I was asked to address concerns such as how to handle crosstalk and some other things that can come up in a meeting. And when there is crosstalk in a meeting, it's very scary. I don't like to confront. I want everybody to like me. And what I try to do in those situations is to just say a gentle reminder, and I reread the passage on crosstalk already in the format. And that usually suffices, you know, and repeat what the topic is so that we can go towards something as opposed to going away from something else. Oh, we're sharing on this. Let's go towards that. If in the course of a meeting someone shares that has less than 7 days, this has happened. And the woman came in and shared, and I said, oh, sweetheart, we're so glad you're here. You're going to have an opportunity to share after the meeting. There'll be an after-meeting fellowship type of thing, and there'll be someone there to answer questions, and you can ask all the questions you want. You can also write down phone numbers. We're so, so glad you're here. The last thing I would want as a newcomer is to be shamed for not, quote-unquote, following directions. And again, I'm tasked with the responsibility of making sure that the integrity of that tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers, to stay on topic, and to gently let people know that there's an opportunity to get specialized attention in what they're bringing to the table and the pain that they're in. And the woman afterwards, I think I gave her my number, or she took down some numbers, and it went really well, and I think she felt welcome. The other thing that I have been asked to talk about is when there's noise or an unmuted line. One of the things that I try to do is never ask my meeting participants to mute their own lines. Most of the time, whoever's unmuted doesn't know they're unmuted. And to stop everything and ask participants to mute themselves, to me, takes time away from the message. So if I start hearing crunchiness in the background, or somebody's putting silverware in a drawer, or chopping vegetables, as we so often can hear in the course of the meeting, I just pop the mute. You know, the mute button is my best friend, and I have learned not to be afraid of it, and it has served me well. And a quiet meeting is a happy meeting. And I don't know that I have a whole lot more to share with regard to how I work a meeting, but these things have served me well, and I'm very, very grateful to have the privilege and honor of leading meetings. For me, it's just a great deal of fun. I just love having the opportunity to welcome people and to be able to be part of that message. In my mind, when I'm leading a meeting, I'm participating in creating a well, and that's a well that members can draw from from the experience, strength, and hope of other people, and in turn, they can offer theirs, and they can take away experience, strength, and hope. So it's a positive all around. And this way, the after meeting becomes the place, or the one-on-one outreach calls, or the sponsor calls, are the places where the trials and tribulations may be discussed. And I just feel very grateful to talk about this. I really, you know, at the risk of belaboring my talk, I'm just going to stop right there. Thank you for the opportunity to share on these topics. And my name is Barbara, compulsive eater from Albuquerque. I'm in the Mountain Time Zone. My number is 505-720-3773, 505-720-3773, and I pass.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you for sharing. And our next speaker will be T.
Hi, everybody. My name is T.
Sorry, T. How would you like your time?
This compulsive eater would like her time to be 5 and 1. Hi, my name is T, and I am a compulsive eater. I came into the rooms June of 2012. I live in Southern California, and so I have an awful lot of face-to-face meetings. However, I did start at 3 meetings a week to a face-to-face group that I enjoyed. And yet, because I'm in business for myself, when I found out about the phone bridge, it really was a fabulous fit for me and my schedule. I am a food inventory and STEP sponsor, and I have led 2 different phone bridge meetings. One I did came to believe for a year, and currently I'm leading a big book meeting on Saturday nights, 9 o'clock Eastern time. And I also opened a face-to-face meeting quite a while ago, and it lasted for a year because of the time. It didn't grow very much, and so we closed it. I've always enjoyed being on the phone bridge. It just, as I said, fits into my schedule, and I also enjoy leading meetings. I'm a motivational speaker by my career, and what I like about leading meetings on the phone bridge that it gathers together so many facets of my personal program. It kind of just scoops everything into a focus, allowing me to practice patience, acceptance, being a team player, and of course, under that umbrella of service, I get to experience all of those tools and character traits that I didn't have until I came into this program, as I have in this program now. I can incorporate the tone of the meeting, which is a fabulous thing to have be in a program such as ours. Safety is something that's very important in a tone that is in a phone bridge meeting, because in a face-to-face meeting, you can see people's face. We only have our auditory experiences to feel safe. And so I think tone has an awful lot to do with feeling safe in our phone bridge meetings. I'm aware that during the meetings, that all we have is tone and our voices, that the flow of the meeting is very important. And so when we are in a meeting, to have our tone be upbeat, to have acceptance being the answer for whatever happens. And as was said in our first speaker, Susan, you never know sometimes when people are going to get bumped off the line and come back upset. And I think that, again, tone, voice, calm, and reassuring has so much to do with our program. And there are many, many types of programs that we have available for us to lead as Bill sees it. We have the big book meetings. We have topic discussions. We have pitch and speakers. We have the promises. We have came to believe, daily reflections, happy, joyous, and free, steps and traditions, living sober. Each meeting is so different, and each meeting has a tone. And if you're listening to this fabulous workshop, I would suggest that you pick something that you enjoy the tone of. Or, if you want to stretch yourself, pick something that isn't a fit. That has to do with everybody's comfort level, with what they want to do. And another speaker had talked about starting off being a timekeeper. So I've realized through outreach calls, some people are shy, and some people need some encouragement. And we all have, and we all come from different places, and we all have different experiences, and we all have different blanks that we want to learn to fit in to our program and to ourselves. And so the good news is that we have formats for this program, whatever it is that we're leading. And if we need help, we can find the help in order to get some clarity if you're not understanding something. I find this challenge of learning to be a little more patient, learning acceptance, is such a good focus for my program. And I think that each meeting has its own theme, and we can kind of have those flowers grow in the garden of whatever it is, the theme that there is. I think that upbeat and acceptance is the answer. Not everybody's in good shape when they come on to a meeting. Certainly, I have found that to be true for myself. And I've come away from the meeting feeling very good and brought up. And maybe I didn't speak during that time. Which leads me to something that I do want to address. What do we do when we're leading a meeting and there's some quiet time? How do we get people to identify and want to start speaking when there's silence? Nobody wants to read. Nobody wants to share. Well, I call them little fillers, and I think that when we say and reiterate what the topic is, what chapter we're in, what page we're reading, what paragraph we're in, it kind of is an invitation. You're reaching out with your words to encourage someone to go ahead and read, and maybe after they read, they want to share. And so I think that those little fill-ins are very helpful, and I've learned those fill-ins by listening to other leaders on the lines of our phone bridge. If no one says yes to be a timekeeper, for example, I asked this of somebody who has got a lot of experience just yesterday in leading a meeting. And what was told to me is to say, okay, everybody just be aware of their own time instead of me saying, okay, fine, I'll do it. Now, okay, fine, I'll do it is not the kind of tone that I would like to, roll out, because that feels a little grumpy to me. And so what helps me to stay upbeat is to accept we don't have a timekeeper. And so this idea from another fellow was thrilling for me to hear. Asking for volunteers for the fellowship after the meeting. No one wants to volunteer. Okay, well, acceptance. Someone might jump on the line, and this absolutely has control over the idea of
5 minutes.
Thank you. This has to do with the idea of control of the flow of the format. So if somebody, and I've had this happen, somebody wants to read for a third time, you got to just hold off and say, let's see if we have any other people who haven't read yet that would like to read. I don't want to crush the person who has a lot of enthusiasm and wants to read for the third time, but I also want to leave that space open to someone who may be getting up the courage to want to read or share. I think that we need to create a balance. There is a fine line of encouraging and welcoming for all to share, and being careful of not having too much encouragement so that somebody's feeling like they don't want to share. I personally forget sometimes that there are shy people, and many people have expressed to me when I've done outreach calls that they have a fear of sharing. So I personally like to stay awake in that area, that softness in offering an opportunity to share is needed. And it could be somebody's first time of sharing in our program. It could be that they've lost a loved one and it's very difficult for them to open up and speak, and they've been speaking. We don't know what's going on the other end of the telephone. So I think that we just need to be aware and see how it all leads us. Service is giving to ourselves to help CEA HAL continue to function. Service is freedom from bondage of self. We're told that in our 7 tools. And we are also told in our 12 steps. Step number 12 has to do with being of service. In our concept, we want to remember that we accept them as requirements for our recovery, that we know that there are many, many type of phone bridge meetings, and I would just encourage everybody to go for it and participate in your program. Your program will say thank you. See if it's a fit. see if it's a stretch. Maybe you get bored at certain meetings and you don't go on them. That might be something that might fit into your program when you're ready, that you want to stretch into your program to do something that would be a little uncomfortable, but work for you to have it be a success. Last night, we had a business meeting, and I needed to... I'm so happy that this happened. I needed to ask for some help. I've never led a business meeting before. And for this perfectionist, that was a real big step. Except that it came so automatic for me. It was so easy for me to say, I need some help. Do we do this? Do we have a second the emotion? Oh, wait, it's not an emotion, it's emotion.
1 minute.
So, thank you so much. And so I allowed myself to make some mistakes, and I didn't have to be perfect for last night at the business meeting. Now I have a business meeting under my belt of experience, strength, and hope. I want to thank you all for letting me share, and thank you for putting this workshop together, everybody who's participating. And my telephone number is in the 805 area code, 558-1208, 805-558-1208, and I am in the Pacific Standard Time. Thank you all.
Thank you, T. And we're going to open up for questions until top of the hour. So if you have any questions, and we are being recorded, for any of the first three speakers, now would be the time. You don't have to have any absence requirement to ask a question, but please be brief and to the point.
And hi, Suzanne. This
hi.
Is Michelle. I'd like to ask a question. Couple
Go
questions.
Ahead.
Thank you. I'm Michelle, and I'm in Carson City, Nevada, and I lead I co-lead the Living Sober meeting at 1 p.m. On Friday morning, on Fridays, and also I'm involved in the Hidden Promises meeting at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sundays. And I really appreciate all of the points that everyone has made. My questions involve a few technical things. For example, somebody said, you know, don't ask people to mass mute or to mute themselves. Just do a mass mute. And my question is, how do you do a mass mute without interrupting the meeting? I don't know how to gracefully do that, because I'm kind of thinking that if I just do a mass mute and somebody's in the middle of talking, nobody will be able to hear them.
Okay, I can answer that quickly, because that's a technical question, and I'll be talking about the technical aspects. I'm Suzanne. And so you say, one moment, please, I need to do a mass mute, there's background noise, and then you just do it.
Okay,
you don't
want to
do it
that.
Without announcing it, because, yeah, it throws the person off, but that's
great.
How you do that.
Okay, and let's see. My other question is about, oh, shoot. Suzanne, I'm sorry, I forgot.
Write it down, and we'll have another session of questions and answers after the next speaker.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to ask a question of any of the three panelists?
Term of being a leader, is it 6 months, a year? What is the term?
Oh, thank you. I know the answer, but would someone else like to chime in? Susan, let's ask you. What is the time that one needs to be a leader?
Yeah, thank you for the question. The regular meetings, it's 30 days of back-to-back See How Abstinence. And for the marathon, it's the same because they're meetings. And then it goes up to a different level of abstinence for workshops, which I think is a year of back-to-back.
Okay, you know something? I worded that wrong. Okay, how long should a leader be in the leader's position?
Okay, this is Susan again. Each meeting is autonomous, you know, and so I try to avoid the word should a lot, but, you know, generally it's month-to-month commitment, or some meetings like to do quarterly. You know, so say if the cycle might be coming up June, July, August, or something like that for the next quarter, and some meetings monthly. So it does depend, and meetings have their own business meetings, and they decide how to do that.
I think that the interview has had a suggestion of no more than a year, but it is a suggestion. I know that some of us have been leading a meeting longer than that because lack of people wanting to lead. So I think that is the suggestion, is no more than a year. Do we have any other questions?
I came in late, so if these have been asked, please forgive me. First question is, how, when you're on a meeting and you've led that meeting and you're trying to be helpful, when someone hasn't been provided with the updated format, and for instance it's a 20-minute meeting and what they've got says 15, what is a polite way to help them, or do you just stay silent?
Okay, let's ask that first. Barbara, would you like to handle that one?
Yes, ma'am. Ideally, as the leader, my job is to make sure that I have an updated format. If I don't have an updated format and someone makes that suggestion, then my job is to be gracious and receive it. As far as being caught with my pants down, so to speak, if I'm in that position, what I would like most to hear is, I think you might have a different format. There was a recent meeting and the share time changed from 20 to 15. Oh, thank you very much. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. I must have an old format.
Awesome. So, and one more that's pretty simplistic, but I'm not smart enough to know it. What's the best way to time, let's say you're doing a 20-minute share, and you have a new leader on the line, and you have an impromptu speaker, and I was in that situation, and they went 5 minutes, and then they went 5 minutes, and then and I was confused where I was. What's the best way to either ask for your time and or time, if that makes any sense?
Okay, I'll answer that because I was going to do part of my share, the technical aspect. I think, and I'm Suzanne, I think what I have found for myself is that if someone tells me 5 or 10, I have to tie in the middle of my share, stop and think, does that mean 5 minutes left, or I've used 5 minutes? So what is helpful, and to keep it simple, if it's a 15-minute share, and they say they want a 5, 5, and 5, and say, hey, you have 10 minutes left. You have 5 minutes left. Because then it's simple and to the point, and the person speaking is not really distracted from their share. I don't know if I explained that well. I hope that answered the question.
Thank you so much.
But I'll go over it again a little bit in when I share.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think, hello?
Suzanne?
Yes.
It's T.
Go ahead, T.
I'm sorry, I didn't unmute myself, so I couldn't answer. One of the things that I did with my format is once we get the name of a time, spiritual timekeeper, I'll say, and so such and such will give us a 1 minute warning, and she'll say, you have 1 minute left. And so that's kind of in my format of a little buzzword for the timekeeper to say 1 minute left, and then everybody knows it and everybody's on the same page. So that's what we've done in the meetings that I've led. Hope that helps.
Thank you, T. Does anyone else have any other questions up to this
yes.
point?
I have a question.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. How do you go about being a leader or moderator in a meeting, and how do you find the most current format when you are a leader or moderator?
Okay, I'll answer that because that's the technical part. So you get on a meeting, there are meetings saying we need a leader or there is no leader. And the formats are on the website. You go to cahow.org and go to PhoneBridge. To get the format for that particular meeting, you usually get it from a current or past leader because a lot of meetings have tweaked their formats. They are a little different. You know, some don't do announcements. Some do phone numbers after your reader share. Some do all the announcements at the beginning. However, if you are willing to lead a meeting and you get on and you have a format, it doesn't have to be perfect. So as long as you're willing to do it, let's say you get on Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and for some reason the leader has brain fog and is not there, and no one is willing to step up, you could step up. You go on the website and get a format for steps and traditions. And even though it might be a little different than what the format says, or what the format is for that meeting, it doesn't matter. You're willing to be of service. And there'll be some more technical aspects that I'll share towards at the end of the meeting.
Okay, so is there one number to contact for the meetings, or does each meeting have their own person to contact if you want to be part of the cycle of the leader or moderator?
Each meeting is autonomous. So each meeting has its, you know, and so if you needed the leader code, you could either get it from another leader from that meeting, but if there are no existing leaders, then you would contact either the PhoneBridge meeting coordinator or the PhoneBridge secretary, and they could give you the leader code. And we'll go over the chimes and the mass mute at the end of this workshop. And we don't discuss the leader code in open, we'll have tons of leaders, and we really don't need that on the leader code. So that is not discussed openly at a meeting. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, Suzanne, I have a question about changing the meeting format. I'm updating some meeting format. Just give the newest gmail.com address and things like that. Now, if it's things like that that I have new information for, do I need to call for a group conscience in the business meeting to do those kinds of changes?
All right. I mean, I know the answer, but Barbara or Susan, would you like to answer that?
Dan, can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Barbara.
I've been knocked off about 3 times, so if I cut off in the middle, you'll know that's why. Something's going on. Typically, when there are edits and changes being made to the format, that is something that I've heard discussed in business meetings. And that there may be other ways of doing it, but I've heard it done that way.
Thank you. Susie, would you like to chime in?
This is Susan. I would say the same thing about the changes come up at the business meeting and someone volunteers to make a change, because there's usually a secretary at the business meeting and a leader, so it's some type of cooperation. I mean, I have made some quick changes by hand on my own format from time to time, but I think for the sake of being able to pass something on to the next person who leads the meetings, it's best to work with some other people on the meeting when you have a business meeting.
Okay, and this is Suzanne. If let's say, I'll just give an example. Let's say there's a new PhoneBridge sponsor coordinator. Obviously, you don't need a business meeting to change the phone number of that person on the format because that's an administrative thing. I mean, the number's different, so that doesn't matter. You can change that. However, I know that one of the meetings I used to lead, I don't know, remember which one, they lengthened the definition of crosstalk, and no one voted to put that in the format, so it's not in the format. That's important because each meeting is autonomous, but when it comes to administrative stuff like, let's just say the website name changed or the address changed. we don't need a group conscience to, you know, put that in the announcements, because that's important. That's, we don't have any say in that. But the other stuff is at a business level meeting. I hope that answered, gave a little more insight. So, and we have time for another question, I think.
This is Carolyn in Michigan. Could I ask a question?
Yes.
I often don't know when the business meetings are and how to get a hold of anybody from, say, I'm leading a Thursday meeting and I can't do it and I don't know who to contact.
T or Barbara or Susan, would you like to T first? Would you like to tackle this one?
Hi, this is T. I think that's a great question, and I would see if there's somebody that you know that's been on the PhoneBridge meeting that you're leading a while, so that you might even find out that there isn't one that's scheduled every 2 months or every month. But when in doubt, call Suzanne. That's what I'd say.
Barbara, our meeting
coordinator?
I would add to that that usually in the formats, they make it a special point to say when the business meeting is. And I do believe that we have contact people for each meeting. And that's one way to reach out and get some clarification.
Yes, this is true. So even if there hasn't been a leader, there's a contact person. The PhoneBridge meeting coordinator would have the contact information. Each meeting is different. Some meetings have a meeting every month, some every 2 months, some every 3 months, and some don't have them. And the meeting contact person could have an idea of when that would be. But usually if you're past the format from someone else, it should be in the format. We have a business meeting every X amount of time.
So if I were to look up the format for, say, a relapse meeting that's at 5:30 in the morning or something, and I could go to my website and find that information on that meeting format, it would say a contact person?
No, it's not there. You would have to contact PhoneBridgeMeetingCoordinator@gmail.com and send them an email and ask who the contact person is for that meeting.
Okay. Okay.
And tell them why, because I need to know when the business meeting is.
I have a question. My name is Tway.
Go ahead.
Yes, and regarding the business meetings, I attend a regular meeting. I'm an intergroup rep for, and we've never had a business meeting. How do you handle it? Because people that are leading meetings only have 30 days of abstinence. Where do they get training and experience to lead business meetings? I need to approach the person that, you know, I have contacted the leader about having a business meeting. It hasn't been done yet, but how do we help these folks? Because they really probably don't know what one sounds like or where the format is and all that stuff. So we just need some help in that area.
Yeah, well, let's see. Well, that's what this workshop is about, first of all, and hopefully the workshop is helping to answer that question and to ease some of you know, the hesitations. One of the things that I jotted down that maybe I didn't say in my talk is that a person who is a past leader or moderator can be a very good resource for the present day moderator. In some ways, it's going back to keep it simple. You know, we have a format to follow, and, you know, we're all willing to help out in some ways. It can't be that everybody on that meeting are all newcomers or newly abstinent with 30 days of back-to-back abstinence. So there, you know, there's always that, you know, that person that's done the service already, and I think it's part of the responsibilities of a leader or a moderator, such as myself or somebody else that's doing it and passing it on to the next person, to be available. And because it really isn't difficult. There's just little ins and outs that a person would need to know, you know, helpful tips. And hopefully we've touched on some of them already. And I hope, you know, if there's more, because, I mean, again, we really just need to have a meeting. You know, that's the purpose. That's the motivation. We need to have one of our, you know, three CHOW meetings. And this is how we do it. I hope that helps.
And I will say there was another workshop just on service, and it did go over how to do a business meeting. So, Tway, if you want to call me later, I can...
Do you mean the business meeting? There is a format for the business meeting, too.
Yeah.
For that. And, you know, none of us could have to be shy about asking at a meeting, when is the next business meeting?
Yeah, you can always call for one. Well, I'm calling for a business meeting. So you have it in 3 weeks or 2 weeks. So there was a workshop, and it does go over how to do a business meeting. So I hope we'll go over it here a little bit. But this is more about leading the meeting, but we will touch upon the fellowship after the meeting. And if one of the other speakers that are coming up would like to go over a format for a business meeting, please do so. Okay, we're going to wrap it up for now. If you have more questions, please stay on for towards the end of the meeting, the workshop, and we'll have more questions at that time. All right, our next speaker is Mary Ann.
Thanks so much, Suzanne. Hi, everybody. Mary Ann D., recovered compulsive overeater in Atlanta.
And how would you like your time?
5 and 1, please.
Okay, thank you.
5 minutes left and 1 minute left.
Thank you.
I have been in the fellowship for many, many years. It dates back to March of 1998, but my current abstinence dates back to August 18th, 2014. I am a full service sponsor, and I am maintaining a 70-pound weight loss. The first thing I want you to know about me and my program is that service is the foundation of my spiritual condition. It's just that simple. And when I decided I was going to come back into the rooms, it was on the 18th of August, and I got busy in service as soon as I could go to my first meeting. And as you all know, I couldn't do very much because I just had about a nanosecond of abstinence, maybe didn't even have my first abstinent meal yet, but I could do something. And so I made it my mission to be the moderator of the after meeting on every single meeting I went to, if time permitted and my schedule permitted. And I can say with complete confidence that is the thing that built my service, and it's also what kept me abstinent, because the best way to keep it is to give it away. And so I just want to source the big book just for a minute from page 85, and this is the 10th step in the big book. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line if we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And my watchwords and my kind of foundational words for facilitating our meeting are preparation, punctuality, order, and momentum. And so I've been doing this for a few 24 hours, and so preparation is not as important as it used to be, but I can tell you, the very first meeting that I ever moderated was a Friday night Came to Believe meeting. I got to my desk 30 minutes in advance. I set up my headset I was decided I was going to call from my landline. I had the phone set up in a particular place. I had my format in front of me. I had the Came to Believe book in front of me. I knew where we started. And so I was ready. I was nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. And I love talking on the telephone. I actually love having interviews over the telephone. But I was nervous because there are a lot of moving parts. And, you know, part of it is the leader code. Part of it is getting the volunteers at the beginning. And so I am kind of like Barbara in that I always have a piece of paper with all of the volunteer positions on it for that particular meeting. And so then I, when I get on and I ask for volunteers, I have a way to keep track of them. Now, I am of the opinion that it is, I like to get on the meeting ahead of time, and I like to get the volunteers before the meeting starts. Now, this sometimes opens up a seething cauldron of debate, kind of like what's talked about in the doctor's opinion. But for me, my experience is that it helps me keep order, and it helps me keep the momentum going. And those are really important things for me as I lead a meeting. Everybody's different, and, you know, to each his own. But I like to get on, and that's what being punctual is all about. And so I get on early, maybe 7 minutes before the meeting starts, so I can get my bearings, log in as the leader. And the other thing is sometimes the after meeting has now stretched into, you know, just we're bumping right up against the next meeting. And so I like to get on so I can just, you know, graciously and lovingly say, you know, hi, folks from the previous meeting, we're getting ready to start our meeting. You know, is there a way you could, you know, finish up so I could get my volunteers? And so that's the punctuality part. The order part of it is that I am ready for volunteers. So when somebody tells me what they want, what they want to do, I write down their name, and then now we get into the momentum part. And the momentum part for me really hinges on the first part of the 11th tradition, and that is, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. I have an obligation to not only craft my program in a way that would be attractive to somebody else, but also to be of service in a way that makes this program attractive. And if it's just something as little as the line being quiet, keeping order and keeping the momentum going, then, you know, I feel like I've made a contribution to the attractiveness of our program. Because I think we've, you know, all been on meetings that have been disorganized. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of noise. You know, things happen. And so I just try to be hyper-vigilant about, you know, those things, the order, the quiet and the order and the momentum. I do want to say something. I don't know if Suzanne is going to say this, and if you were, Suzanne, I apologize. I have found something that is a little problematic in the mechanics of utilizing cell phones. And I didn't even know this was the way cell phones were until somebody said one day to me, oh, I'm so sorry, Marianne, I interrupted you because of the delay. And I said, what are you talking about? And they said, when you talk on the cell phone, there's a delay between what I'm speaking and when somebody else is hearing. And boy, did that open up all kinds of revelations for me. And so I just want to put that out there to just talk about the different, not to technically the differences, but you know, sometimes people are calling from the landline. Sometimes they're calling from their cell phone. Sometimes they're using Skype on their iPad. Sometimes they're using you know, a tablet to call with Skype. Sometimes they're using the computer. And depending upon the vehicle they're using to show up at the meeting, sometimes things just don't work right. You know, getting unmuted is hard. Getting remuted, you know, might be kind of difficult. I know when I'm leading a meeting, I always try to talk on my landline if I can. And my second choice is my cell phone. But when I'm listening to a meeting, I'm not going to be doing any talking, I listen on my iPad, Skype on my iPad. But I know sometimes when I've tried to share and I try to unmute, it doesn't work very well. So I said all that to say that there are things that can be going on that seem kind of peculiar or challenging, and I think it's just because of the mediums that people are using to call into the meeting. So what I try to do is go by the kind of the watchword, and that is less is more. The less I talk, especially when I'm trying to interact with somebody, when they're trying to say something, the better off I'm going to be. So if I ask for volunteers and somebody says something, you know, I just pause and wait 2 or 3 seconds before I go on to the next service position in that meeting, just to give it time for that cellular thing to catch up. I don't even know what it's called. I'm sure somebody much smarter than me can explain it better. But because if I don't do that, now I tend to be talking over people. And so that's another reason why I like to get all the volunteers up front. So, you know, they can get done talking, and then I can just say, you know, okay, Susie, you're next with, you know, whatever they're doing. I might be the exception, one of the exceptions to the rule, or the guideline, in that I have been leading the Monday Came to Believe 7 a.m. meeting since
Five
the day I could.
Left.
Thank you so much. Since the day I could lead a meeting. So that dates all the way back to 2014. And I am more than willing to relinquish that at any business meeting, and I show up at every business meeting and wait for volunteers. But if there are no volunteers, I have to remember, number one, that service is the foundation of my spiritual condition, and the other thing is that the harvest is plenty and the workers are few. And if I can be a worker, if I can be of service as a moderator of a meeting, then that is what I'm going to do in the absence of somebody else wanting the spot. If they want my spot, I'm happy to give it to them, but if they don't, I'm going to continue to do it. Because I need to. I think that's all I have, Susan. Mary Ann D., Atlanta, in the Eastern Time Zone, 404-396-6522, 404-396-6522. Back to you, Susan.
Thank you, Mary Ann. And our next speaker is Jan. Jan, are you there, and how would you like your time?
Thank you so much, Susan. My name is Jan D., when 5 minutes is left in 1 minute.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Jan D., compulsive eater. I have been in program and abstinent through the grace of God for 12 years, 10 months, and about 15 days. I led my first meeting the day that I stepped up. My sponsor, that was the expectation, and I didn't know any better, so I did it. It was a face-to-face meeting. I had been to 5 or 6 meetings before I did it, and I was a little bit nervous, but didn't know that I couldn't do it, so I did it. It was the first time that I told my story that I qualified. You know, it's just been growth since then. Leading meetings, right along. When I first started, we only had one meeting, one face-to-face meeting, and I may have been before PhoneBridge actually started or was very active, and I didn't even know that there was such a thing. This was back in 2004. And so I made do with one meeting a week, and when I could get there was a larger city 2 hours away, when I could get there, I would, but that wasn't very often. That was maybe once a month or once every other month. But I decided, I'll just start a meeting. So I started a meeting here in this little town where I live, and the meeting grew, and then one of the participants started another meeting, and so I had three meetings to go to. Then there was, after I was in program for a couple of years, I had gotten very ill, and I was couldn't leave the house for about a month, and that's when someone said, try the phone meeting. And so I did, and what a blessing that has been. So now I'm able to combine phone bridge and face-to-face meetings. And right now, I'm the only qualified leader in two of my meetings, so I lead them. Then the other meeting is I'm sharing leadership with another person. Different kinds of meetings, we do a group conscience, and we decide, okay, let's do 3 months of book study. Let's do 3 months of personal sharing, whatever it may be. And when I started on PhoneBridge, I was afraid to lead a meeting. I don't know why. I'd been leading meetings for years. But it seemed so different. It was almost scary. Even though I had a format right in front of me, it was scary for me because I wanted to be perfect. Well, today I learned I'm not perfect. I'm a work in progress. Even today, after all the meetings that I've led and all the meetings I've attended and learned from everyone, we're sharing the message. We're sharing everything about ourselves. And what a gift that is. I looked up the definition of a leader as opposed to a manager. We're not even going there. A leader in our context is one who offers guidance and directions. And that's exactly what we're doing when we lead a meeting. We're a guide. We're a guide through the format because we don't control anything. We only offer loving guidance. And we can do that through the format, and there's even suggestions on how to do things on the format. On the current formats, most of them that are on the website, they have recently in the last, probably 2 years, have updated the definition of one of the things that concerns many of us negatively. It may interrupt a meeting or cause problems for us, discomfort in how to manage this. And I still, it's called crosstalk. I still encounter this, and sometimes in my little meeting, I catch myself because I'm wanting to crosstalk because it's only myself and another person, and I just want to have a conversation in the middle of the meeting. Whoa, I have to stop myself, and I have to wait until after the meeting. But what this says is we ask that no one give advice, and please, no crosstalk. Crosstalk during the meeting refers to expressing a compliment, commenting on someone's share, any form of disruption, advice giving, or speaking directly to another person rather than to the group. Sharing our own experience, strength, and hope, and avoiding crosstalk frees us from worry about negative or positive judgment. This is very profound as far as I'm concerned. When I'm leading a meeting, I make sure that I take my time and read that so that hopefully everyone hears it. When I have a newcomer, back to face-to-face meetings for a moment, when I have a newcomer, I preface the meeting before we start. I'll tell the newcomer, you know, I welcome them and explain that we ask that newcomers just listen for the first meeting. You know, if you want to write down questions, you know, I offer them a pencil and paper. And then after the meeting, we'll have time to talk. So this generally works. They just sit and listen. But I do offer them the opportunity to read something that does not require any abstinence at all. So they can participate in a way. But when I'm on a phone bridge meeting, generally, I've not encountered problems with crosstalk, and this oftentimes happens. I do a lot of speaker meetings where people are sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And sometimes, you know, it's something that I they share something I just can't relate to, so I just kind of, there's no problem of crosstalk for me. But sometimes I just want to be so positive and, oh, I just loved your share, and this really did this for me, and that's positive crosstalk. So, you know, the way that I try to manage that is manage it in myself, and I try to set the example. I try to make sure that I don't crosstalk. And that really seems to work. When someone is finished sharing, what I do is thank you for your qualification. Thank you for your share. And that's all I say. Something we can remember, too, if I hear someone and I've really been moved by what they've had to say, I make sure that I get their phone number at the end of their share so I can call them after the meeting and let them know how much I got from their share. You know, compliments are something that in the past, due to my personality, I was always looking for compliments. And I was hoping someone would say, oh, that was wonderful, when in fact, I can't expect that, and I shouldn't have it. I'm going to say what I have to say, and that's sufficient because I am spreading the message. And that's where my responsibility lies. I can only keep it if I give it away, and that's one of the ways that I do service, and I am able to give it away in meetings. Another thing that often comes up is when we're on, we do a lot of book studies
Five
in this program.
Left.
Thank you. We do a lot of book studies, and we read from AA-approved literature. And one of the things that AA has definitely requested, and this is given to us by World Service, this message, when we are reading from AA literature, we are to read exactly what it says. If I'm reading from As Bill Sees It, I will read about the alcoholic. But in our minds, we automatically transpose that to compulsive eating, and that works. In the tools, it's under literature, it says we use food for alcohol and so forth. And that we do that in our minds when we're reading AA literature so that we're adhering to the guidelines that AA has been so gracious to allow us to use. Because without this program, I wouldn't be alive today, probably, at least emotionally and spiritually. But this is one of the courtesies that we afford the authors of the literature that's been so much a part of our program. Now, we have our traditions, our concept, our steps, and our tools, which are written for us. And so these we read as they are written. The things that are in Forever Abstinent, we read the way they are written because they're written for Compulsive Eaters Anonymous How. So that's not a question. As a leader of a number of meetings in the past, I do lead one meeting just about every week, and it's a meeting that's very close to my heart. I've been kind of reluctant to give it up, but that's something that I need to consider doing, you know, sharing. I had a period the end of last year where I was unable to lead meetings, and someone stepped up and just so graciously said, don't worry, I'll take the meetings for the next 3 months. And I'm like, what a blessing that is. That, you know, so I do step up also to help others. When someone says, hey, you know, I'm stuck, can you lead this meeting for me? And I'm like, yes, I can, you know, unless it's absolutely impossible, of course. But most of the time, I can do that. And I like doing that because it gives me more of a well-rounded picture of the kinds of meetings that are out there. I'm going to start another meeting once a month. And it'll be a pleasure to do it. And leading meetings is a great, great service. And, you know, service is freedom. And it keeps us abstinent. It keeps us where we need to be. And on that, I will give you my contact information. I'm in Arizona. My phone number is 928-279-6021. That's 928-279-6021, and that is currently Pacific time. It's Arizona time. And I thank you all for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope.
Thank you, Jan. And our next speaker is Janie. Janie, are you there? Please let us know you're there and tell the timekeeper how you like your time.
Hi, yes, thanks, Suzanne. 5 and 1. My name is Janie. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater, anorexic, and bulimic. My abstinence date is November 9th, 2013. I've released 60 pounds while being in CHOW. I was a lot fatter before I came in. And I'm currently 134 pounds, and I'm 5'6.5". I am a food inventory step and maintenance sponsor. I have a medical abstinence as a vegan for my heart health and for compassion. Being a vegan is a spiritual way of life for me. How do I lead the meeting, my experience, strength, and hope? Well, I try to remember to ask my higher power to make it obvious to me what his will is. Just make it, draw me a picture, make it obvious as I lead this meeting. And I also ask, and when I do the Serenity Prayer, I ask for the courage to do what I sense his will is, not the power to carry it out. I know he's going to give me the power. But what I need is the courage to do what I hear him say, because very often it's not really what I want to do. So just give me the courage. And I knew when I came in, I was so desperate. I knew that in order to stay in the middle of the CHOW rescue boat, I had to do service. I just knew that. I didn't think I'd make it. And leading a meeting was way, way too overwhelming for me. So I decided that I did all the service I could to get my feet wet and just to feel less isolated. I decided to begin with leading after meetings. And so what I did to lead an after meeting, I thought, well, I can do that. I couldn't possibly lead a meeting. It's too frightening. But I listened to how other people led the after meetings very carefully. Because remember, I was new, and I was just crazed and into my addiction. So I listened to the after meetings. I went to a lot of after meetings every day. And I listened to how they led the meetings, different people, and I wrote a script for myself. You see, I'm ADHD, and I'm compulsive, obsessive-compulsive disorder. I do things visually, so I needed to write a script to make it simple. And I saw what other people did, I heard what other people did, and what made sense to me. And I had this piece of paper that said, you know, hi, I'm Janie, I'm going to lead your after meeting, and you know, I'm a whatever. And it broke down being frightened. And so I got to the point where it wasn't so bad. I was feeling comfortable leading an after meeting because, remember, I was doing it. And I always had a piece of paper and pencil to take notes. So in order to lead a meeting, I did something very similar for the real meetings. It's very simple. It won't take very long. I printed out the format of the meeting. That's what you do. You print out the format. And I got my three-hole punch out, and I put it in a three-ring binder where the meetings were in a three-ring binder. And I had other, you know, I also in that three-ring binder had when all the meetings were during the day. And so at the top, I wrote in block letters the leader code because I tend to get frightened and I can't think. So I made sure it was right there in ink. I wrote the leader code. I wrote out the backup number. And I wrote out the other codes so it would be right there on the format, you know. Star 2 tells you how many people are in the meeting. Star 8 is the chime. Star 5 is to mute. I just had to do that. To keep clarity. And then at that time, we were still giving phone numbers. So I had the phone numbers for the sponsor coordinator, you know, the meeting leader coordinator had their phone numbers right there. And when we had the business meetings, I would have that. So I wasn't caught unaware. I like to be prepared. So I don't know. It says here, how do you set the tone for the meeting? And I don't know. I just did what seemed right, and I tried to be kind. So I encourage anyone who's afraid to do these meetings, it's a gift. Just be yourself. And if you flub, so what? You know, this is a job. Leading a meeting is a job. It's a volunteer job. You can't get fired. And you don't get paid. So, you know, go ahead and do it and see what happens. Also, how do I set the tone for the meeting? I was grateful. I was very grateful that I had this opportunity, and I kept thinking I'll never make it. I don't know how I'm doing, but I don't think I'll ever make it. I also wanted to address that if there are times when the meeting is quiet, what happens when nobody wants to share, and we've reached an impasse, I read from the literature. I have different pieces highlighted in the big book, Came to Believe, and those, all of the literature. So I read something that inspires me. If it's a topic meeting, I'll say, these are the topics that we have. Does anyone want to share on the topics again? If it's a maintenance meeting, I refresh their memory. This is what we're doing for this maintenance meeting. But if it's a literature meeting and it's quiet, I'll read something from that particular literature just to hopefully prime the pump and get people moving. Or if the meeting is quiet and it's appropriate, I say, is there anyone in trouble who wants to share? Anybody that needs to talk? That has over 7 days. Would you just like to share something? So just keep listening and doing that. Find out, you know, I think I still listen to how other people lead meetings. How do I lead the meeting effectively? Well, prepare ahead. I'm a big believer in preparation, and I'm a believer in writing it down. Remember, I'm visual. I do well looking at it. I also prepare. I like to be there 5 to 7 minutes ahead of time in order for me to get readers. And I like to get there early to ask my higher power for insight. What do you want to happen to this meeting today? I have paper and a pen. And then, so when I'm leading the meeting, I copy down the phone numbers of people that share. And now I've created my list of sponsors. So I have that. When someone says they're a sponsor at any meeting, even if I'm just listening in, I'll write down that person volunteered to be a sponsor and their phone number. This is how I can lead effectively. I can say, well, I have a list of available sponsors. And I always try to say, and I also have our current sponsors' phone number, sponsor coordinator's phone number, and I give them Susan's number if they need a sponsor. So there's a lot that can be learned. And how has being a meeting leader helped my program? I must say the benefits are so subtle, and the benefits are profound. I did become more confident in all areas of my life. I became more confident on the line. Initially, I was so easily frazzled, but it's better. It's been 3.5 years, and it's better. It also boosted my recovery because people got to know me. It helped me to make my daily phone calls because when I called someone, I could say, hi, I'm Jenny from St. Petersburg, Florida. And sometimes somebody said, oh, yes, you led the meeting this morning. I remember you. You see, it took me out of the isolation. My disease kept me in the isolation. And one thing that leading a meeting does, it gets you right out of isolation. And that's where the disease doesn't want us. The disease does not want me to lead a meeting, but recovery does. And then those who do service, this is what I've observed. They have very high visibility, obviously. You hear them all the time. And it showed me how to stay in the middle of the Sea Howl rescue boat. When I'm in the middle of the Sea Howl rescue boat, I'm less likely to fall over the edge and slip. So I like to stay in the middle if I can. And leading a meeting is a spiritual food I always craved. I was always eating, eating, eating. I couldn't get enough. Or shopping or doing all sorts of my other addictions. But leading a meeting, it's feeding me spiritually, and that's because this is a spiritual program. And leading a meeting is a spiritual commandment. I really believe that. I do it because it's a joy. It's an honor, and I just want to say that I also do it because as Dr.
Bob... 5 minutes left.
Thanks. Thanks, Iris. As Dr. Bob says in the big book on page 180, his story is, he was such a humble man. I never meet him, but from everything I read, he was just a gem. It says at the bottom of page 180, I spent a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. Number one, it's a sense of duty. Number two, it is a pleasure. Number three, because in doing so, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. That was Bill. Number four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Unlike most of our crowd, I did not get over my craving for liquor much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. It was almost always with me, but at no time have I been anywhere near yielding. Imagine he had the craving for over 2.5 years, but he did all this service. So if you want to know why I do it, those are some of the four readings. And I don't have any more to say. I think everybody else has covered the topic splendidly. And I'm Janie in St. Petersburg, Florida, the East Coast, 727-544-5116, 727-544-5116. I work my program for medical abstinence as a vegan for my heart and for compassion. And I want to tell you, if I were not in this program on the phone lines, this is what Theo has given me on page 152 in the big book. It says, the most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. If you had told me that 4 years ago when I was deeply in despair, I wouldn't have believed it. I would not have believed in 4 years my life would be getting better. Because it says on page 153, the age of miracles is with us. And this is a miracle. So I encourage anyone who's nervous or scared, call me and I'll help you work out a plan. Thanks so much. I pass.
Thank you, Janie. And I'm going to be the next speaker. I'm going over some technical aspects of leading. So, and after that, we will have questions and answers. And timekeeper, I would like if you could tell me 10 minutes left, 5 minutes left, and give me a 1 minute left. Thank you. I'm Suzanne E., and I'm a compulsive eater. I'm grateful to boot. My abstinence date is April 6, 2003, and I have given away 62 pounds, and a food inventory step sponsor not available. And I just want to go over a little bit about, briefly, how I got to be lead a meeting. Some of us are not born leaders, and some of us are very hesitant leaders, and we learn along the way. And when I first came into CA How, I did not think I could ever lead a meeting because there's the format, and I cannot read the format. So I didn't think I could do that. However, I think most of my service commitments I have not volunteered for. Most of them I was asked or told to do them. I came into the program knowing I needed to be of service because I'd come in through a different program and they really emphasized service. And so my sponsor told me, well, you, at a face-to-face meeting, you can be the diet drink person. And I thought, good, because I could be good at that. And I was really good at that. I had a nice variety. They were nice and cold. It was not an important commitment. But it got me to each meeting, and it got me there early. And that kind of set the stage for when I was asked to be an intergroup leader many years later, an intergroup rep. I was not asked. I was told, "Darlin, you're our new intergroup rep." And that's how it started. And that same person said, "I need you to lead the 9 p.m. meeting Saturday night because I can't be there." And I said, "I can't do that." And that person said, "Yes, you can." And I said, "I can't read the format." So I'll just go over the requirements. The formats are on the website. I always suggest if you're going to lead a meeting, don't count on it just being on your phone. Print it somewhere because cell phones do fail. And I have people have called me frantically, "My phone died, I've lost the format, what do I do?" So I always say, if you want to have it on your phone, that's fine, but have a backup printup copy because the technology does fail us. So my friend said to me, "You know, there are the requirements. You need 30 days of absence to lead a meeting. Has stepped up as a food sponsor." Well, I qualified. I had plenty of 30 days. Make sure that the steps, the traditions, the concept, and the tools are read. And at that time, you didn't need 30 days to read the tools. You do now. So someone with 30 days has to read the tools. Make sure that people share that they have 30 days of absence, or 7 if their pitching has been discussed with their sponsor. Chapter 5 at the beginning is optional. And then be mindful of your time. Start the meeting on time and end it on time. Ask for a spiritual timekeeper. And then the announcements. She said, just do the announcements the best that you can. So that's how I started leading a meeting, because my friend was in a bind, and if it weren't for her, she's no longer with us. I don't know when it would have happened, but I owe her a debt of gratitude because she had the confidence in me that I did not have. So if you're ever caught without a format and you can't get internet access, just remember those things. It's really important. So to have the format is important, but if you don't, remember the requirements. So I lead a meeting and I don't have a written format. It's all in my head, and I don't have a great memory. So I have never led a perfect meeting. And when I came into the program, I was a perfectionist, or so I thought. And someone took me aside and said, "Stop being perfect. Just do it." So I owe her a gratitude. So I do the best that I can. So, okay, so the next thing I did the one meeting she asked me to do. But what I started doing before that, and if it weren't for that, I couldn't have led a meeting. I started doing the fellowship after the meeting. That I could do. And so we have to remember, whether it's the meeting or the fellowship after the meeting, why are we there? We're there for our own program, our own abstinence, and to save ourselves. And we're there for the newcomer who still suffers, or a returnee. That's who we're there for. The rest is all...
10 minutes left.
Thank you. The rest is important. So I always make sure that the newcomer or the returnee after the meeting feels welcome and safe and wanted, and giving them time. So I'll start with the after meeting. I'll start there. So hello, everybody. My name is Suzanne, and this is the fellowship after the meeting. Are there any newcomers or returnees? That's how I start, and that's how we should always start, because the newcomer and the returnee are the most important people in the meeting. And that's, you know, if you can give the website information, if you don't have the phone number for the sponsor coordinator or their outreach list, refer them to the website. That's really important. And you don't have, there's no absence requirement to do the meeting after the meeting, the fellowship after the meeting. So I get on the meeting, and I do mostly, I used to do a morning meeting, but now I do, well, morning for me. I now do mostly evening or late night meetings. And there are not a lot of people on the meetings, and a lot of them don't get there on time or even early. And some of them may be in a position where they can't read. So I'm sort of at a disadvantage in many ways. So I get on the meeting on time, and I do ask, does anybody want to volunteer to read? If I don't have anybody volunteering to read, I wait until I know there's going to be at least one person who will volunteer to read, because I can't read. I'm totally blind. So I don't usually wait till I have all the readers, because the meeting's going to start late if I do that, because I lead later meetings. So as long as I know there's going to be at least one person that can read, we get started, and then I ask for the next person, and I ask for the next person. Each meeting is different. Sometimes in the format, the spiritual timekeeper is a position, and sometimes it's just on a meeting-by-meeting basis. So I say, I'm Suzanne, I'm a grateful compulsive eater, and I'm the leader for this meeting. For those of you who'd like to, please join me in the Serenity Prayer. After the prayer, the line is unmuted at this point. I then ask for any newcomers or returnees to give their first name so we may welcome you. After that, I say, I'm going to do a mass mute. So when you get to be a leader, there is a leader code. You dial in the regular number, the regular access code, but instead of hitting pound, you're going to hit the star sign. Then it's going to ask for the leader code, and that leader code we don't give out openly. You're going to put in that leader code and hit the star sign again, so you're on the leader code. Star 2 will give you how many people are there, and if there's another moderator on the line, you'll know that. It'll give you how many people are participating. Star 8 turns the chimes off, and there's different options. You want it to say entry and exit chimes are off. You might have to cycle through a few times, but you'll get the hang of it. The other one is star 5, and that is to mute. There are three parts to it. One says all callers are muted. You don't want that one. You hit it again. All callers are unmuted. Well, you don't want that one. The one that you're looking for is all callers are muted and may unmute themselves, so that you're good. The other controls, don't worry about. Just star 8, star 5 are the most important ones, and star 2 will give you the count of how many people. The other ones, please don't worry about them. It's kind of confusing. When someone wants to lead a meeting, I always say, let's get on the meeting way before the meeting and let's practice, 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 so that you're comfortable with it. Okay, so after I do the mass mute, and then I go, welcome to Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, blah, 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 and then I go into the readings, people read, and then we do the format, right? So each format's a little different. We read that. So then we ask if it's, I'll just do the 12 and 12 because that's the one I'm leading. I will say who would like to begin to read. Now, I have a hard time remembering where we are because I used to lead too many meetings. And I used to lead two big book meetings and two 12 and 12 meetings and two came to believe meetings. And so it's like, how do I keep track of it? So in a way, for me, it's good because if you get on a meeting that I lead, be prepared to be of service and read. And there are certain people that will get on the meeting knowing I need to know where we are, and that's their service unofficially to keep me on track. And I'm forever grateful for that. Sometimes I do remember exactly where we are, and that's a miracle. But I've learned that I don't have to be perfect, because if I was waiting for that perfect time, it was never going to happen. Trust me. So I'm not perfect, and I make mistakes. Sometimes I make more
Five
mistakes.
5 minutes left.
Thank you. Other times. So what I have learned is helpful, and Marianne brought this up, but I want to emphasize. If I say, would someone like to read, I have to wait because it takes a while for someone to find the book or to unmute. So let's say someone has finished reading and they don't want to share, and I say, would someone else like to share? Before I open my mouth and say, well, then would someone like to continue to read, I have to wait. Give it at least 60 seconds because of all the types of different technologies that are involved, whether it's cell phone, Bluetooth, Skype, regular landline. You got to give a person a chance to unmute and speak. And it is always helpful to pause before we start speaking so we don't speak all over each other. That's always helpful. So sometimes there are things that happen in a meeting that's not in the format, and you just have to kind of use your loving common sense. I have led meetings when I have been sick because no one else wanted to do it or I could get someone else to do it, and I will say, I apologize, I'm sick, but I'm here willingly. And I think what I want the message for this workshop to be is, why do we do it? Because of love of ourselves and program. And if I'm not feeling well, I fake it till I make it. I may say it. I may not feel well, or I may have something heavy going on in my life, but I want the meeting to sound loving and welcome and safe. So leader does set the tone and that it runs smoothly. So I make sure the line is muted. There's no interruption there. Sometimes if there is a second leader on the line, it's really not a problem. You don't have to freak out. Sometimes if you're leaning on a cell phone and if you star 6 too many times or star 2, your little screen can get full, and then you lose control of the meeting, and you think it's the second moderator, but it's your cell phone. So you have to hang up quickly and dial back in if that happens. Timekeeping, it is always good to say if there's a three-minute time, tell me 1 minute left, and then time, because then I know there's 1 minute left. We kind of addressed that earlier in the meeting. But if it's a speaker meeting, it's always easy to say countdown, 10 minutes left, 5 minutes left, because we don't want to interrupt the flow of the person sharing. I always thank the person, if it's a speaker meeting, who's sharing. And I say this to everybody, what a wonderful or great share. I say that to everybody. So I don't say thank you for your share to one person. I might say to someone else, thank you for a wonderful share. Everybody shares a wonderful or great share for me, and that's just me. And I think it's important to thank people, because we are not in a room where we can see each other, or in my case, feel each other. And it's important that we hear each other and that we connect on that level, that this is a welcoming, open and loving place, and a nice meeting, and it's safe. So then we get to the part of the meeting where we ask for newcomers and returnees, and sometimes the person might share, somebody share. I don't stop them unless, you know, they might share, I'm so glad to be back, and whatever, and then I'll say, would you like to leave your number twice? You don't have to, but if you'd like to, you may in your time zone. And then if they continue, I will say, you know, I always say to people, we've been waiting for you, or we need you. Because they're like, oh, wow. It makes them feel like, oh, wow, this is where I need to be. This is where I want to be. I always make the newcomer and the returnee feel like, oh, that's special. Because we are special. We're all special. So I always say, you know, you can share more. You can share on the during fellowship after the meeting and ask questions.
1 minute left.
Thank you. And I did have, and I'm going to go over my time, everybody, because I think it's important. One time I had one person come on the meeting, and they shared that they were on a trip with a relative out of country, and they were struggling on day 3. And it was not a positive share. It was probably a 2-minute share. I did not interrupt the person. I thanked the person for sharing, and I just said, a friendly, loving reminder, we must have 7 days. Oh, I didn't say must. We are to have 7 days to share. And that person got back on and was angry and said, I have many years of abstinence. What are you talking about? And then someone else said, I want to share it. I said, okay, go ahead and share it. But the first person that said that, they were on day 3, said, oh, so-and-so, you know me. You can vouch for me. And I said lovingly, you can share during fellowship later, but so-and-so, we're going to move on and go to the next person. I don't like interrupting people, but I also know that this is a structured and disciplined approach, and I have to be loving, and it's not my job to shame someone or to correct someone. I had a conversation with someone recently about, you know, do I say in the middle of the meeting, hey, you forgot this and that? I used to do that sometimes if I thought it was really important, and probably at times when it wasn't that important. But I'm learning. People make mistakes, and unless it's really important, I don't need to correct somebody. Because I know when I lead a meeting, I can still be nervous at times, depending upon what's going on in my life. And if someone comes in and corrects me, and they have a tone because they're exasperated because I gave the wrong information, I may not feel so great. So I know how I feel. I have to remember that. And I can't expect perfection from myself. I don't expect perfection from anyone else. I want a loving, safe place for a meeting. And I want it to be about the recovery and emphasize positive shares. So, and we close the meeting, and it says there, after a moment of quiet meditation, for those who still suffer in and outside of the rooms, for me, that's when I silently pray for all my people who I know, who either left program or in program struggling, or whatever the case may be. I always, and I have a list of people when I go over it in my head, so I always wait long enough for people to do that. Some meetings vote for 60 seconds timed, and that's great, or however long. And the optional reading, the last reading is optional. So if there's no one that wants to step up and say, I'll read it, you can skip that and close with a serenity prayer. And this was also brought up in the meeting, the workshop as well. If someone, sometimes we can't get many people to volunteer, and other times they're stepping over each other. So give a chance to someone else to share or to read or to be of service. And that's important. Business meeting, there is a format on the website. And any changes to the format must stay, it's suggested, stay in place for 6 months. So if you change the format at a business meeting, give it a chance for 6 months. Last night we had a business meeting at a meeting I attend, and I reminded them it's 6 months to stick with what we changed. And so remember that as well. And remember why we are here, for ourselves and for the newcomer and the returnee, if the person is still suffering. And that is why we are here, and to talk about recovery and hopefully have positive shares. And I had a sponsee ask me, well, there's a lot going on in my life. Can I share about that? I said, absolutely, but always remember, turn it into positive. So please don't emphasize the negative. And that's really important to when we're leading a meeting. We are to be uplifting and positive, because we all know what it's like to be miserable. And we're here for the recovery. And I'm Suzanne E., and if any of you need any more answers and we don't answer them at this workshop, please call any one of us. And there are formats and information on the website as well. I'm Suzanne E. in Pacific Time, and my number is 818-208-9171. 818-208-9171. And one other thing is, in the formats and the meetings I lead, I do emphasize, please don't change any of the wording in any of the books that we read. Please read it as it's written. And that is really important. And that was also voted on. Not only are we doing it because AA has asked us to do that, it was voted on at conference a couple of years ago. So that is that, and we will now open it. Also, a friendly reminder before we go to questions, if you like the workshop, and if you feel compelled, please send in a donation for the workshop through the Seventh Tradition. Okay, and we're now going to open it up for any questions. And please don't give your name, just ask the question. Any questions on leading a meeting?
Suzanne, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Thank you. If we have a business meeting after the meeting, when is it best to have it, either before the after meeting fellowship or before the after meeting fellowship?
I'll answer that, and if someone else wants to chime in as well, it depends. It might be in the format of each meeting, and if it's not, if there is a newcomer, I would say do it 5 minutes after, give 5 minutes for the newcomer. If there are no newcomers or returnees that spoke up, you have it right away. But usually they allow 5 minutes. But sometimes some meetings have it right away. I don't know, let's see, if Mary Ann or Jan or Jenny would like to answer this.
Suzanne, we usually do it after our business meeting, and that just seems to be kind of you know, what happened, and so we never really have brought it up as to changing it in any way. We just say, you know, we're going to have a business meeting, and then somebody will be on to, you know, talk to the newcomers and returnees. So that's how we do it at ours.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Jan, would you like to chime in?
Yes. We never really addressed it in a business meeting. What I normally do is I kind of play it by ear. If we have newcomers, I like to give the newcomers the opportunity to at least identify themselves and then ask them to hold on, you know, give them phone numbers to call if they need something right away or whatever, but then we, you know, give them 5 minutes.
Thank you. I have another question. I don't know how to handle inappropriate shares. Somebody, and what I mean by that is somebody's talking about specific foods or they're cross-talking, or maybe you can't hear them and they're not, and I want to know how to nicely ask them to speak up or change the phone or, you know, whatever they need to do. And honestly, this happened once in an after meeting. This person was using profanity. And so I would like to know how to handle those kinds of situations. Do I interrupt them? And how do I do that?
Jan or Janie, would you like to address this?
This is Jan.
Okay.
I think the best thing that I found is to just, you know, excuse me. You know, just mentioning that it's not appropriate. You know, I don't have any magic thing that I say, or but it's just whatever. We're asked not to use profanity, or we try not to mention specific foods because they may trigger some of us just hearing the name of the food, and it may be between someone's meal times, and it could cause them to run to the kitchen. You know, for that reason, we don't speak about specifics. And trying to stay positive is something I might mention. Trying to stay positive in the meetings, even the after meeting.
Danny, would you like to comment?
That's a tough one, because right away when people are using profanity, I see it as they're angry. That's how they get their, it's very angry language, and it accelerates things. And I think the best thing to do is turn to your higher power and say, how do I handle this? Pause. Because I get very agitated when things are out of control, and ask God to direct my thinking. And, you know, you may want to have it on the format. We'd like our language to be gentler because it's disruptive. We can share without using profanity. I'd appreciate that if you would do that. And if people are sharing, you just say, we'd like you to share without using foods. We honor other people's recovery by not mentioning the problem. Those are tough ways to handle. Thank you. I pass.
Marianne, would you like to chime in?
I would, Suzanne. Thank you. I'm going to graciously disagree with our other panel members, only from this standpoint. I have never seen anything in any format that talks about profanity. And without something in our format that is stated, I don't really feel like it's my place to ask somebody to stop using the language that they're using. But again, that's just an opinion. And on the subject of food, I love what Janie just said in terms of, you know, I would interrupt the individual who's talking. And just say, I need to interrupt you just for 1 second. We refrain from using any kind of food language in our share. Please go ahead. Because that is stated in our format. And I actually try to do it during their share so I can stop it, kind of in the moment. And just, I do it as graciously and as lovingly as I can. And because then, if you do it at the end, and then you say, well, here's a gentle reminder that we don't, you know, mention specific foods, then the individual has already gotten off the line, and they don't have a chance to correct their course of the share. So if I do it while they're doing it, then they can, you know, they can continue and, finish with their share. I'll pass with that.
Thank you, Mary Ann. Yeah, I like I don't like to interrupt someone who's sharing, but if they mention food, I'll give an example. Someone, I've done it, we might mention a food item because it's just a saying or something. If they do it once, I don't say anything. The second time they start it, I will interrupt and say, then that's when I will interrupt. I don't interrupt someone if they're sharing for other things that I mentioned earlier in the workshop. But when it comes to food, I do. I will, and I very lovingly say, we don't mention food. It might trigger somebody. And they'll say, oops, I forgot. But I haven't had, of all the meetings I've led, I haven't had any problems with people using a lot of profanity. Sometimes there'll be a word, one or two, but not like where it's a tirade. And it's like people have to be people and be able to express themselves, and I can't micromanage everybody when their language. So, yeah, that's what, and we do, you know, we do interrupt because they're talking about food. We do it in a loving way, because that's not my job to shame someone or to you know, but it is my job as a leader to make sure it's a safe place. And if someone's talking a lot about food, then it may not be safe for some people. Any other questions?
Yeah. This is Cheryl, compulsive eater. I have a question.
Okay.
Regarding the after meetings, don't we specifically invite newcomers to those meetings? I believe we do.
Yes.
Therefore, if someone is using profanity or mentioning outside issues, different religion, or anything else that constitutes outside, shouldn't we not interrupt and let them know? I know that I have had people in the past that have left because when they heard outside issues mentioned at the after meeting, they believed that that was part of our program. So do we correct people when they do that?
Oh, boy. Okay, who would like to take that one? Anybody of the panelists?
This is Marianne again. Sure, what I'm hearing you say is that profanity is an outside issue. And I don't see profanity as an outside issue. Now, anything else that somebody might be talking about, I would correct them, but... Or, you know, I just remind them that we don't talk about outside issues. But I know it's a very slippery slope. I don't like to hear it. I don't do it. But I don't think we can censor someone's share because we don't like their language.
It would make, Cheryl, it would make me extremely uncomfortable to the point where I might want to hang up. And that might be the case with a newcomer, too, or even other people. So how can we address that without not addressing it, but even though it doesn't say specifically in our traditions or format, but it's not, it may prevent people from hearing the message?
Suzanne, may I speak?
Yes.
This is Vanessa. I was on the PhoneBridge Outside Issues Committee and on the last workshop about outside issues, and it's a very complex topic, and a variety of opinions were discussed, and I feel like that's already been covered in the last workshop,
yeah.
So I don't think that we should open up that can of worms right here. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to let T answer. Go ahead, T.
Hi, it's T. I think that's a fabulous question, and from what I've understood is the fellowship meetings are kind of like being in a coffee shop or in the parking lot of a coffee shop. And for me, if someone started talking about religion in a parking lot or using profanity outrageously, I would say something, not being a leader, but being just a fellow. And I might say something like, ouch, we're not all of that faith, and or ouch, that's pretty heavy language, my little ears, maybe with some humor. Is that direct? No. But at least it could be said as an observation of kind of sort of maybe I'm protecting, first of all, my own ears, but also the ears of a newcomer. So that's just my take on it. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, T.
Suzanne?
Yes?
May I throw in 2 cents?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Barbara, compulsive eater from Albuquerque.
And I just want to point out that the after meeting is conducted by someone who does not have an abstinence requirement. So the argument is moot. Anybody can conduct an after meeting. And we're not putting sanctions on an after meeting. Now, whether or not we would be doing that is another story and maybe subject to perhaps a business meeting or a group conscience. But as it stands, there's not a structure or edicts, so to speak, for the after meeting. Pass.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a bit controversial. It's been, at the intergroup level, this has been a hot topic. And there was a format written for fellowship after, and I call it fellowship after the meeting because it's not a meeting. You say the meeting after the meeting, and it's not that. It is fellowship after the meeting. And it did not pass. There were some logistics involved, but it did not pass, and so we don't have one. The guideline is only that newcomers and returnees can ask a question or share. And so, and this workshop is more about leading a meeting, and there was that workshop last time about crosstalk and outside issues, and not everybody's going to be comfortable with everything that's said during fellowship, and someone can speak up and say, can we please not talk about this? All right, any other questions about leading a meeting? If you would like to lead, I would like to throw this out there. If you would like to lead a meeting and you're kind of like, lead the fellowship after the meeting. Get your toes wet there. The next one is lead a marathon meeting. That's always a great, it's a one-time thing. And then you can feel if that's for you. And the other one is if you become, and I should have said this when I was sharing on the workshop there, if you become a leader, right away when you become a leader, whether you're a co-leader or a leader, ask someone to be your backup. Don't wait until you need someone. It's always good to have a plan B. Life happens. And a lot of people do not volunteer. Ask. I've had to ask people, could you take over the meeting? I have to give it up. That didn't happen the last time, thankfully. Someone was loving and said, I'll do it. But ask someone, hey, can you be my backup? And don't always wait for someone to volunteer, because as I shared, most of my service positions I did not volunteer for. Someone either volunteered me or asked me to do it. So don't hesitate to ask somebody to help you, or to help lead, or be a backup leader, or anything else. Before we close, are there any other questions? Okay, well, I think we'll close with a serenity prayer. And I want to thank all of the speakers, and I want to thank our spiritual timekeeper and everybody who asked questions. And this will be available on the recording line. I want to thank everybody. Okay, after a moment of quiet meditation, for those who still suffer in and outside of the room, please star 6. And to unmute your line and join me in the serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity and the surrender in me
to accept the things that I cannot change,
courage to change the things I think I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thy will, not mine.
Amen.
Suzanne, thank you. Thank you, panel.
Thank you,
everybody.
Thank you, Suzanne.
Thank you, panel.